It's a funky Friday here on WKTY La Crosse, 96.7 FM, 580 AM. Hope you guys and gals are off to a great start today. Thanks for being with us. Huge guest lineup this morning. We're going to start ourselves off with the Coast to Coast After Hours host, CBS Sports Radio's own Amy Lawrence, coming back to the show for us. Amy, welcome back to Wisconsin. How are you?
I'm good. I wish I was actually there. I would love to see my family. And you guys have had so much snow already. I'm jealous. Grammy Helen's been telling me all about it.
Yeah, you were here in, what, August, right? You were out here when it was still...
Yeah, I generally visit five or six days, Appleton area,
yeah.
In August or in May. Those seem to be the two times when it fits my schedule the best. But also my Grammy has a couple of other family members that'll visit her here and there, and she really... It's overwhelming for her to have more than one person in town at the time, so we kind of spread it out.
You know, your Grammy, it sounds like your grandmother, your Aunt Diane, is that correct? Because you were talking about her this morning. And your mom.
A cousin.
Okay.
My mom's first cousin. They grew up together, but I'm also really close to her.
So you were on a bit of a tear here this morning, and I want to get back to this later, talking about a situation with Myles Garrett that got her, well, you got all fired up. Now, did your mom's cousin say, listen, just be calm. Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine.
No, she didn't even say that. She just said, enough now. Calm down. I'm not sure if she... Now, she listens to me on a regular basis, so she, of course, will have heard me get fired up before. But I think maybe because of the subject material, she was a little nervous that I was just kind of, you know, not going to be able to control my temper.
Yeah.
I definitely was fired up, passionate about the subject material. I'll let you introduce it, but I think she actually got a little worried because I was not. I don't normally get that fired up on the air.
Yeah, and you're like, it's fine. It's a show, right? You know, sometimes we've got to drum it up. And listen, this situation with Myles Garrett, I do want to get to that in a bit. Is just this is perplexing. It's sad, and I've got a very hot take on this as well. Before we get into some of the things that we wanted to touch on here with you this morning, Amy, including what team has been your favorite in the NFL to watch this season, and who's really been the biggest surprise for you? I'm really curious, and I'm sure a number of our listeners are, that listen to you mornings here on WKTY or late nights. What the hell is the sign in your front yard, and why can't you get this thing removed?
Gosh.
You had a listener actually propose to you that you decorate it Christmas style, and you're thinking that's possibly public defacing. So what is this sign?
It's a ginormous construction sign. I haven't actually tweeted a picture of it yet because it's so annoying. I don't even want to take a picture of it. But it's got to be at least 10 feet high. It's got two metal legs, and at the top of the sign is a giant orange, it's a diamond, and it says road work ahead, one of those typical construction signs that let you know that there is construction ahead. Well, the construction, first of all, the sign's been there since August. Second of all, the construction didn't start until a month after they put the sign in my yard. Then the construction took maybe 3 weeks. Okay, great. Keep waiting for them to get the sign. No, it's been a month. The construction's been done since the end of September. It's insane. And so there's a number on the back of the sign that I'm considering calling. My property manager says she's reached out to the Department of Public Works, but if it's not a town issue, which I don't think it was because I live near a state road, it's probably a state construction crew that put the signs down. Yeah, and it reflects. The orange is so bright, it reflects on my living room wall.
Yeah.
So I come downstairs, and my living room looks orange.
See, and
it's
that,
ridiculous.
That's unnerving. At the time of day, I was going to say night, morning, it's really hard to tell when you might awaken to do your program. But whenever you wake up and you see a large orange glow, that can be a bit disconcerting. I don't know if I could do that. I did like that you had a listener, and Amy Lawrence takes phone calls. So if you guys are up and at them in the middle of the night, she might get you on. You did have a listener propose that you paint this sucker green and possibly decorate it Christmas style. And then you started running down a number of the different ramifications that could come from that. And I'm with you. I wouldn't touch it either. I would pick up that phone. I'd call those people.
Yeah, I got to start calling people. It's just so annoying. I feel like I shouldn't have to. It's your sign. Come get it.
All right. Well,
and I can't be the only one, because there are signs, like there are multiple streets that dump into this highway.
Yeah.
So I walked across them yesterday, and I could see the sign in other people's yards too. And so I'm guessing that other people are having the same issue, but you're right. I do need to stop just getting mad about it and actually take some action.
Well, either that or you could have your dog walk, right? And you just like accidentally keep bumping his leash into it until it falls over. Like, oh, man, I just, who would have thought this would happen? The dog.
I mean, I've tried a couple times to tug on it to see if it's like loose enough for me to pull it out of the ground. I probably would need some help to do that, though.
Gotcha.
So then I'd have a partner in crime. Then someone else would be going to jail.
Yeah.
Then we'd have to worry about who's snitching. I mean, it could all be very messy.
Well, then your producers, they just take over your show, and you can't have that happen. Andrew might enjoy that, though. That's something. Amy, I enjoyed listening to your program. I'm up, of course, at before any reasonable person really should be to do this show. So we get occasions to listen to your program pretty much on a daily basis. You know, one thing I've been really looking forward to getting your opinion on here is which team do you think this year in the NFL has been the most fun to watch? Not necessarily the best or the most dominant, but who have you enjoyed watching the most that's not named the Broncos? Because I know you have a specific, you know.
I don't enjoy watching them at all, actually,
okay.
So that would not be the answer to my question, to your question. Really, the Seahawks, I think, have been highly entertaining this year. I've loved the addition of Jadeveon Clowney. Certainly, the fact that Russell Wilson is having an MVP-caliber campaign has been amazing. They're just never out of games. And I don't remember the exact numbers now, but the majority, I think all but two of their games have been separated by 7 points or fewer, and so they just get into these close and late situations, and you know, they find some ways to wriggle off the hook or to come up with a dramatic victory like they did against the Niners in overtime. But I also, and I'm not saying this just because I'm speaking to you in Wisconsin, the Packers have been a lot of fun to watch this year too, because they're finally balanced. It's not just Aaron Rodgers who has to cover up for the deficiencies of the rest of the team. The defense is the unit that was winning games for them early. I love seeing what Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith have done, and it's just been really neat to see the excitement build around that team as well. And of course, having the loss of Devontae Adams hurt, but it's been awesome to see Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams step up and come up with some huge plays too.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with that even a little bit if I wanted to. I've really enjoyed this, Amy, and I don't know what your thoughts are about this, but I've kind of enjoyed the resurgence of the running back position again. There was a period of time, and not even that long ago, 3, 5, 6 years ago, in which the running back position was being completely devalued. I think it was Devontae Freeman had the largest contract at that time, about average of $8 million a year. Well, this year we've got Dalvin Cook putting up huge numbers in Minnesota. Zeke, of course, doing his thing in Dallas. You talk about the Packers, Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, Christian McCaffrey doing some incredible historic things in Carolina. Do you think, Amy, that as the game evolves, it can also swing back, the pendulum can swing back a bit, and running backs can now be looked at as a bit more valuable, or is this still going to be a one contract and you kind of side-eye them?
Well, I don't know that it's ever going to change that teams would prefer to have a cheaper running back in his rookie contract who has fewer hits on his body and fewer miles on his legs. That's never going to change. Now, could we see more teams take a chance with an older running back the way that Adrian Peterson, Frank Gore, even LeSean McCoy have remained relevant? Sure, we might see teams that have a history with a particular player. They take a flyer on a player, a veteran running back who maybe won't cost them a lot of money. But the position itself, it lends itself to youth and to guys who have the ability to be explosive, and that very often is guys who've had less pounding on their bodies. But in terms of the game of football overall, there's nothing new under the sun. They're not reinventing the wheel. What they're trying to do is figure out how to beat their opponents in ways that maybe they're not expecting, and I just really am fascinated by the way that we've seen so many teams play the ball control game this year. The Ravens are doing it. They're trying to run 200 yards per game, but they're also trying to keep the ball away from their opponents. The Colts are doing it, and that's really the best way for them to win. Even the Texans last night, now they didn't do it well, but they still would like to be able to run the football. We know the Packers, even the Patriots, I mean, with the revolving door at their running back position, or excuse me, at their receiver position, they don't have anyone steady outside of Julian Edelman, and so they're trying to establish the run I mean, we're seeing teams like the Niners and Chris Carson set the tone for the Seahawks. And so it really has become, among the teams who are leading divisions, among the teams who have Super Bowl hopes, it's become their go-to, their first way to kind of start out a game and establish themselves.
Yeah. Talking to CBS Sports Radio's After Hours host, Amy Lawrence, here with us on our five-star telecom talk and text line. And, you know, Amy, you just brought up a name of a team that I was curious to get your thoughts on as well, the Baltimore Ravens. And I don't know if this fits into the question I was going to ask, who's been the biggest surprise for you this year in the NFL? But I'll tell you, Baltimore, when they drafted Lamar Jackson, I thought, okay, that's interesting. We'll see what John Harbaugh's got in mind. But the fact that Lamar Jackson, I believe now, is 14-3 as a starter, a completely different offense that we've seen in the NFL in quite some time, possibly ever. Amy, would they be one of the biggest surprises to you, or did you kind of see something like this emerging at the end of last season with that Ravens team?
I was taking a wait-and-see approach. I think more than a lot of people who were saying that Lamar Jackson couldn't be a long-term quarterback because there wasn't enough balance. Now, in their last game against the Texans, I believe it was, he completed 13 straight passes at one point.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily expecting him to go deep downfield. He's never going to be an Aaron Rodgers, even a Matt Ryan, a Matt Stafford. But he can throw it accurately enough to keep defenses honest. Now, I still worry about the hits. He doesn't take a lot of them because he's so elusive, but I still worry. It just takes one big hit. But you know what? A quarterback can also tear his ACL just by stepping wrong. Football is a game in which guys get injured. It's just this what we were talking about with running backs. The more hits they take, the quicker their exit is from the NFL in most cases. Now, so I do think we got the prototype late last year for what this could be. And again, it's ball control. It's trying to run it as much as possible. It's the low risk types of plays. And for them, you know, to be able to add a Mark Ingram was huge because now it's not just Lamar Jackson who's running the football. And it's just been so much fun to see those guys in that locker room really kind of adopt his personality, which is, you know, hard-nosed and competitive, but also flashing that big smile. But in addition to them, so yes, it's a surprise that they have played so well because he's so young. But also in addition to them, I would say the Chargers, other end of the spectrum, are a major surprise. And this is a team that won 10 of 11 games last year. It's a team that, in its only loss in that stretch, was a one-point loss to Denver. Otherwise, they nearly pushed the Chiefs to the limit to be able to win the AFC West. And now their turnover ratio is so bad. That's really, to me, as I was doing my research this week, the biggest disparity. Last year, they were in the black. When it came to turnovers this year, they are, is it minus nine? I think it's minus nine in turnover ratio.
That's never going to get it done, Amy. I worked with Jim Fossil, former coach of the Giants, for a number of years. And boy, I'll tell you, his number one his teaching and preaching tool is this: win the turnover battle. We're going to win some football games. Amy, before I let you go, I've got one other thing I want to make sure that we do hit you with this morning, because I'm going to be talking about it later on this morning with a number of other guests as well. And that's the NFL upholding the suspension, indefinite suspension, for Browns defensive end Myles Garrett, who, you know, in my estimation, went way out of bounds, way over the sport in that last Thursday night football game. But yesterday, something happened that I thought was just possibly more out of bounds than the hit itself. When Myles Garrett was in front of his appeals commission, he said that Mason Rudolph issued a racial slur to him, which caused Myles Garrett to tear off his helmet and hit him with it. Now, Amy, the NFL's got 28 on-field cameras. There's microphones everywhere. The official reports are given to the NFL and all of the arbiters as they go through these situations. There was no evidence that they have found so far that Mason Rudolph had said anything. The thing that I was worried most about here is the reputation hit that a guy like Mason Rudolph could suffer. And I think you talked about it at least a bit this morning. I didn't hear it when your Aunt Diane thought you were getting a little too hot and heavy. But talk to us about your feelings here, because I think that possibly what happened yesterday is worse than the on-field antics.
And it's rare that the NFL would come out and issue a separate statement over and above what the appeals officer said. So James Thrash shared his decision, not changing anything about the suspension. Here's the fine. typically that's all that you hear from the NFL. James Thrash is speaking for the NFL and the NFLPA. And for the league to issue a completely separate statement to say we found no evidence, I feel like the league also did not appreciate whether it was leaked or just the fact that he tried to use that as his excuse. As I was saying on my show, it bothers me so much that Mason Rudolph can't defend himself against this. And, you know, there are people who are going to believe him. I thought it was amazing the way that his teammates, some black, some Hispanic, that they all came to his defense and said, no way, we're not going to make stuff up. That's not what happened. Mason did not say that. And it's also really telling that Mason, when he found out about it yesterday at practice, went immediately to his captain and said, what am I supposed to do? And Cam Hayward described him as distraught. And so I think it speaks a lot about the fact that the Steelers, Mason didn't want to speak yesterday. He was supposed to. He declined to do that. That the Steelers, to a man, regardless of their skin color, came out and supported their quarterback when they didn't have to. Marquise Pouncey, do we really think that he would have punched and kicked the guy who just hit his teammate over the helmet if he knew that Mason used that type of word and used racial slurs? And so, yeah, I mean, that's the part that bothers me so much, is that there are people, and my timeline was full of them this morning, there are people that no matter what Mason says are going to believe Myles Garrett. And, you know, we'll never know for sure unless, as you say, something else comes out, though I can't imagine the NFL would have issued a statement unless it was sure, unless it checked the audio, checked the video, and it was sure. But unless Myles Garrett comes out and says, I misheard him, or I flat-out lied, which maybe someday he will do, I mean, Mason now has this over his head, and there's just no way to fight back. And in 2019, where the truth so often is irrelevant on social media, I feel terrible for him, because this is the type of buzz accusation that people are drawn to, and they pass it on, and now there is this suspicion where there shouldn't be. There shouldn't be that. He shouldn't ever even have to deal with this.
Yeah, Amy, I don't know if I could agree with you anymore. And I'll just say this, and I'm going to continue talking about this Myles Garrett situation a bit. The actions on the field seemed a bit cowardly to me in the moment. It was somebody trying to appear tough. And you know, Myles Garrett's had some, you know, people say that he wasn't always the toughest football player. But when you start to say things, and again, with the NFL's statement to the, you know, converse of what Myles said, when you start to throw that out there, that's a real, I don't even know if I've got the right adjective for it right now. That is not a great thing to do to anybody, especially not to a competitor in a league in which you're all members, right? The NFL Players Association makes these guys brothers of sorts. That was a really bad look. Amy, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much for spending some moments with us. Can't wait to listen to you again next week. You're going to be able to get any rest this weekend? What do you do when you get off on Friday?
Weekends are for. Last week I did all my yard work, okay. So as long as I'm not looking at that bright orange glow on my wall, I should be fine.
All right, good stuff. Hey, by the way, let your guys know that meatloaf is just made with regular hamburger meat. They don't use a separate meat for meatloaf. It's
hamburger. Some people do put meatloaf spices in it, though. Well, don't ask me what that means.
I don't know either. I don't like meatloaf myself. Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio After Hours host, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today.
Have a great weekend, Dave. Thank you.
You too. All right, boys and girls, we got to step aside. This Myles Garrett situation, I'm on this. I'm going to go ahead and tell you. When I was writing up my notes this morning, new reason to hate Myles Garrett. During appeal, Garrett accused Mason Rudolph of using a racial slur. It was cowardly. It was cowardice. This is the kind of thing that when you are a man, you do not make up a story about another man, especially when you know it equals fire in a crowded movie theater. Stick around. When we come back, Blue.